songbook. No, I'm kidding. It's actually a Bible here, not a songbook this time. If you want to go ahead and turn to Daniel, that's where we'll be based this evening, Daniel chapter 6. Chris approached me this morning and asked me if there's anything that I needed this evening. I said, just prayer. And he said, just keep it below, keep it 25 minutes or shorter, and everybody will be happy. So I'm going to stretch this out to about 10 minutes, and you guys will be great, okay? Truth be told, I don't know how to preach, okay? I don't know how to do a good lesson. So I found some good resources on the Internet, and I'm actually basing this lesson off of an outline that I found by Brother Phil Sanders. It's based on Daniel, obviously. It's out of the book of Daniel. And most of us have probably learned several stories from the book of Daniel in Sunday school. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the Daniel in the lion's den, the fiery furnace. In chapter 6, just as I was studying for this lesson, this chapter is just chock full of applications and examples of what makes Daniel such a great person to emulate in our lives and in our relationship with God. And it's also another account of God's providence providing guidance for our lives. There's also similarities between Joseph's life, from his meager beginnings to the dreams that he has and interpreting the dreams and rising to power over a region of a great land. So as we kind of get more narrowed down into the text here, just a little bit of background, maybe refresher, of who Daniel is. He entered the service of the king as a young boy after Babylon captured Jerusalem. He was maybe 12 or 15 years old, as best as the experts that I was able to research think. He rises and falls in position as rulers change. And then after push comes to shove, well, it's not really a good way to say it. Anyway, Darius, or Cyrus, as he's also known, comes to be governor of Babylon under King Nebuchadnezzar. And Daniel gets promoted to be second in command over the region that Darius was governor in. He was probably, as kind of shocked me, and I probably heard it before, he's probably 80 or 90 years old by this time that he came to be almost second in power. So to kind of set the situation, Daniel was Darius's favorite appointee. Darius was just right getting ready to set Daniel to be second in power over this region. And the other people who were kind of on the same position, the same level as what Daniel was, didn't want that to happen. And so they started looking. In verse 3, says that Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners because he possessed an extraordinary spirit. These people he worked with, his colleagues, started trying to find a way to get rid of him. They couldn't find anything wrong with his character, with the way he did business. They couldn't find anything to nail him down on. So they started grasping for straws. And then in verse 5, these men said, "We shall not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God." So that's where they focused their attack on Daniel, was to break his relationship with God or make him pay for his relationship with God. So these commissioners get together, make a document, take it to Darius, and they say in verse 7, "All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked." Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is, the injunction that was brought before him by Daniel's colleagues. few lessons that we can learn from this first part of chapter 6. Let me rearrange here a little bit. First off is that flattering tongues often have hidden agendas. The politicians that were Daniel's colleagues weren't nearly as interested in praising Darius as they say. At the end of verse 6, they came to the king and said, "King Darius, live forever." Not nearly as interested in King Darius live forever as they were in what followed. Darius, make it against the law for anybody to worship a being other than you. And one thing of this is that, and I'm assuming probably everybody has heard the saying, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. What appears to be and what the actuality is are often two completely different things. Good illustration of that are, you know, something as silly and innocent as magic tricks, as, you know, your books of visual illusions and stuff. I have a mild affinity for those, figuring out how the brain processes those and gets confused and things like that. A few other passages or scriptures that speak to this. One can be found in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 29, where the writer says, "Behold, I have found only this, that God made men upright, but they have sought out many devices." Another in Proverbs chapter 26, verse 28, "A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin." And Proverbs 29, verse 5, "A man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps." In all these things, Darius was Darius trusted these guys because he's the one that appointed them into these positions of power. But he, and because of this pre-existing relationship he had no idea. He didn't see what was coming, that they were manipulating him. And many things, even today, and this has happened to me in the past, people say, "Oh, you need to do this, and you need to do this now." And we've seen this in our federal government recently, you know, on a lot of hot button issues. If you don't do it now, it's never going to be done. Now's the time. Just do it now. Yeah, thus and such. And this is kind of what Darius was facing too. So I think that's the end of that first point. Point two, not a preacher. Keep that in mind. Be aware of the things that you can't change. Be aware of contracts that you sign. Be aware of promises you make and commitments that you make. The Daniel's colleagues say, "Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be provoked or revoked." There are a few of the things that you can't change. First, history. Two, words that you say. And three, are promises. Knowing that you can't change things that have already happened is something that we should keep in mind as we go forward, as we wake up every day, to set our mind to do things in a way that will not hurt others, won't hurt yourself, most importantly, glorifies God. I tried to find from where this quote originated, but as best I can tell, nobody really knows. But I think it's a good one. I've run across it before. The quote says, "This is the beginning of a new day. God has given me this day to use as I will. I can waste it or use it for good. What I do today is important because I am exchanging a day of my life for it. When tomorrow comes, this day will be gone forever, leaving in its place something that I have traded for it. I want it to be gain, not loss, good, not evil, success, not failure. In order that I shall not regret the price I paid for it, may I have sufficient wisdom and courage that this shall be my record for today." I think that's that offers me a lot of insight as to how I should approach things, and maybe a prayer to start off the day, to get my day off to the right foot. And another reason that you want to be aware of the things that you can't change is because regret is rotten. It's just hard to deal with. We can see that on down in the passage after Daniel went and was caught praying, you know, his three times a day at by his window that faces Jerusalem, and he was ratted out and arrested, and then Darius was trapped in his words, in his contract, and couldn't find a way out, even though he tried. Says that after he threw Daniel in the lion's den, the king went off to his palace, spent the night fasting, and no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. So these are the things that kind of that Darius did that weren't really wise on his part, that allowed Daniel to exercise, show his devotion to God. But another thing that we need to keep in mind is what happened to the men who turned Daniel over, who put this contract together for Darius to sign, to trap Daniel. One of the things that we need to keep in mind is be sure that what you do, if you sin, it's going to catch up with you. It will catch up with you. And just like it did for these men, the trap that they laid for Daniel ultimately resulted in their demise as well. On down in verse 24 of chapter 6, after Daniel had been taken up out of the lion's den, and Daniel had given glory to God, and Darius had, well, that's coming next, never mind. Darius had seen that Daniel was all right, and Daniel had said that the angels came and shut the mouths of the lions. Verse 24, the king then gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them, their children, and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not even reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Several other passages give reason to why we should not, why we should be careful of what we say, what we sin, the things we set in action that affect others. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 10 through 19, actually just in verse 10, says, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 22, his own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. And another thing that I discovered as I was reading through this and reading some of the commentaries was it wasn't just the men who were punished because of what they had done. You'll notice that the men, their children, and their wives were cast into the lion's den. The sins that we commit also deeply hurt those we love. And the whole moral of the story is that being close to God is more important than life. In verse 10, says immediately after Darius signed the decree, says, now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God as he had been doing previously. Daniel, as a young boy, 12 to 15 years old, spent his lifetime serving God, doing what he believed to be right in God's eyes, whether it was not eating food that his group of people were served when they were in training to become servants to the king, to his friends not bowing down in front of the idol that the king had built, to Daniel not letting a decree that would certainly lead to his death change his relationship with God. There was never a question in Daniel's mind as to what he was going to do. This decree, I mean, if there was ever an example of in one ear and out the other, as I heard multiple times when I was young, this was it. He heard that decree and he said, I do not care. My God is who I am devoted to. What if somebody told you that you couldn't pray, that you couldn't talk to to God. What, how would you react to that? Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, Christ says, "And do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both the soul and body in hell." Daniel didn't let the law of man affect his relationship with God. Instead, he used it as a way to demonstrate his devotion and faith. So a few questions as we finish up. If someone took God away from you, would you miss him? Would it change your life? How close are you to God? I know that being here this evening, though our numbers are actually a little bit lower this evening, probably because of baseball-sized projectiles coming our way. But being here this evening indicates that we're more committed than many. But are we as close to God as Daniel was? Do we value that relationship that much? Do we value that relationship to die before we give up the right to pray? If you've determined that you're committed to God, but you haven't been baptized and accepted His gift of salvation, why not? If you're already a child of God, but need the help of the congregation to improve your relationship with God and man, we'd be more than happy to help you. Please make your way forward as we stand and sing.